Welcome back to another episode of The Sweet Spot. This is John Sherman from Practical Golf. And as always, I'm joined by my partner here,
Adam from Adam Young Golf. And
so this episode, let's introduce, I was going to cue him up, but let's just introduce him. We've got Mike Carroll from Fit for Golf. What's up, Mike?
Not much. Things are going well. Thank you very much for having me, guys. I appreciate it. I'm big time fan and a long time follower of both of your work, so I'm looking forward to this.
Well, ditto. You're our go-to fitness guy as well.
Yeah, I think we've done some good work on The Sweet Spot. We're 20 episodes in. We've got people improving their golf games, but I'm going to make a emotional plea here, maybe a sales pitch for this episode. If you're tuning in and you're not sure if you want to stick around at this point, what we're going to discuss today, and we can cue the sentimental music in the background, maybe play it in your head. I think it can absolutely help your golf game, but because we're going to be talking about fitness, this is important to me. I know it's important to Adam. Obviously, it's important to Mike. It's his career. I just think this has the ability to change people's lives. So if you're someone who's never worked out before, or maybe you have in the past and you want to get back into it, I just think it's just such a great thing for your health, your mental state, your golf game. And Mike is really someone who I've learned a ton from, whether it's just fitness in general or specific to golf. I think they overlap a lot. So I'm really excited about this episode because I think, if people just added fitness and working out to their life, it's just mind-blowing what can happen. All good things. And it doesn't take a ton of time either. So that's my little pitch here. Adam, what's your fitness background? I know you've been big into working out over time.
Yeah, so my issue as a golfer was always distance. And so one of the first things I did when I was about 16 years old was grab a set of weights and start just doing golf movements, or what I thought were golf movements. And I put a lot of time and effort into it, and I didn't see any results initially. So then that led me down, well, what am I missing here? So I went down the nutrition road. And so I started looking about, well, how many calories do I need? How much protein do I need? I got obsessed with that, much more obsessed with the nutrition side than I did with the fitness side of it. And that's one of the things that I love about Mike as well. Whenever I see his tweets, he tweets a lot about nutrition. And I've basically been looking at the scientific research for maybe 20 years now. And the stuff that Mike says lines up with that very well, perfectly, in fact. So, and there's very few people out there who have that, as well as the fitness background as well. Because there's a load of myths, and we'll talk about that in fitness, but in nutrition as well. And maybe we can add a little bit of both of those things. But one of the questions to you, Mike, initially is, what would you say is the minimum that someone could work out and see benefit?
Honestly, if people are doing nothing, if they added in one 15-minute session per week, I think they would see an improvement. The improvement mightn't be vast, but honestly, going from doing nothing or very little to doing anything at all that has a little bit of logic behind it can definitely lead to results. The way I would look at it is that if you take someone who's doing zero workouts per week and you add one workout per week of 15 minutes, it's 50 workouts in a year. If we come back a year later, someone who's done 50 workouts versus someone who's done zero workouts, I'm pretty confident there's going to be an improvement,
It's all cumulative gains, right?
Exactly. I generally like if people are going to be at home and they're not really into working out and they want it to be relatively quick, I think you can make really good progress with something like 15 minutes three times a week, which isn't really that hard to fit into your schedule. You can cram it in basically anywhere in your day, and what's kind of interesting about that is it's something that I weigh up in my head all the time. And you guys are probably similar with your golf improvement stuff. It's how much do I have to put in to get, say, most of the benefits? It's kind of like the 80-20 principle we've all heard of, And for about a decade or longer, I've been working out, say, roughly in the gym for about an hour, 3 days a week, basically for about 10 or 13 years or so. And I enjoy it. It's obviously my career. I like it. So I'm willing to put in, say, that extra time. But I don't know if, say, I never went to a gym again and I just worked with very basic equipment at home and cut my time down by, say, 2/3. I know I wouldn't get all the benefits, but I'm not quite sure how much I'd lose. And I sort of had a mini experiment in that during COVID, you know, when the gyms were closed for a few months or whatever. And it definitely wasn't the same. Don't get me wrong. Like, I think that if people are really serious about it, there's huge advantages to being in a well-equipped gym rather than being at home with basic equipment. But if you have a good plan to do at home, even with minimal equipment, like, you can make extremely good progress. And I think that's important because oftentimes people just say they don't have the time, or, you know, they couldn't really be bothered driving to the gym and stuff. But I think we can all sort of, you know, scrape out 15 minutes three times a week. And for certain, if you do that, there's huge improvements can be made.
I think there's two sides of that, isn't there? There's the looking to improve yourself, which is certainly a goal, but there's also looking to not regress. And I found that recently. I mean, I've just hit 37, and I just always assumed that my level of fitness, I didn't always assume it, but, you know, you wake up one day and you're 37 and you're like, where did that come from? And then you jump on a treadmill and you do a 14-minute mile and you're like, what happened there? I was 7 minutes a mile last time. So, like you said, just 15 minutes once a week is often enough to see progress. And I've seen that. I've actually got a treadmill recently, and just doing a one session a week on it, I've got my minutes per mile to go down dramatically with very little effort. But obviously I'm going to hit a point where I'll reach my threshold again and I need to put in more effort. It's kind of similar in golf training as well.
Yeah. That's exactly it. Like, it's really, if you look at it in terms of scales and levels like that, the immediate improvements from somebody who's doing nothing or very little in their beginner stages are huge. Then the beginner stages, you know, to intermediate, they're still pretty linear. They just don't kind of come about quite as quickly, but it's still pretty solid improvement. And then from, you know, intermediate to advanced, let's say if you've been training consistently for maybe a year or, you know, 2 years or something like that, it definitely slows down a little bit and gets more challenging. But to be honest, if somebody's been doing it for that long, I usually think that they've found that they actually enjoy it. So it's not just a case of, I'm only doing this because I want to see, you know, my strength increase by 5 pounds a week or a month or whatever. It's like they just realize how valuable it is to them overall, for whether it's golf or life. And then, to be honest, once you get advanced, like, it's really hard to improve, you know, like, you're basically working really hard just to stay at the level you're at, which is fine because you're a million miles ahead of where you were when you started, you know. And kind of the ultimate example of that, like the extreme example, if you kept going that down that road forever, is if you look at, say, Olympic athletes. They often have 4 years between Olympic, you know, competitions, and they don't improve. But that's, you know, the real 0.0001% or whatever of the highest level of training. But for most regular people listening to this, it doesn't take that much effort and you can make really big improvements, which we see all the time with people, you know?
Yeah, I think I'm a perfect example of that. Probably I'm 37 as well. And I've always worked out on and off, but like everyone else, I get lazy and I kind of get bored with certain routines. And the last 2 years, I've really gotten back into strength training. And in terms of, you know, Mike can talk about the research behind it, but he's someone who really, I think, inspired me to get back into strength training, just reading his tweets. It was something I did when I was younger. And I try and work out for strength 3 times a week for about 20 to 30 minutes. And it's at home. I have a set of dumbbells. I've done some of Mike's workouts. I do a lot of the Peloton app workouts are really good. And it's unbelievable what you can accomplish in an hour a week with good instruction, good form, and commitment. I feel better than I ever have in my life. It's helped my golf game. We kind of had some debates about Peloton. He's been, you know, we see Rory McIlroy riding the bike. And when I first got the bike, I would just ride it exclusively. And I still do, but Mike was entirely right. When I invested 20% of that cardio time into strength training, like, my body just took off. There's just no question that the benefits there are huge. So I think that's a good segue into one of my first questions for you. Like, let's talk about, like, myths. You know, part of your job as an educator and fitness instructor, you have your own website and app and Twitter account, and you're training virtually, you're training like tens of thousands of golfers around the world. You have PGA Tour clients, you have senior clients, people my age. You're really fighting against a lot of the myths that have been in the golf industry for a long time. So why don't you go over some of your, maybe your top myths that you're trying to dispel?
More so for people training for improved golf performance as opposed to general.
Yeah, let's do everything in the context of golf here since it is a golf show. But if you want to inject some general knowledge in there, please do.
The biggest one is that people assume strength training or lifting weights will make them too big and bulky and it will reduce their flexibility. That I would say is the biggest one. And it ties in with people vastly overestimate the value of traditional static stretching. I think because people are under the illusion that if they're working hard with weights, that they'll gain muscle mass, they will lose mobility, that the other side of that is maybe they need to do more stretching. And where that becomes an issue is that it's not that mobility isn't important. Mobility is very valuable for golfers, but how we can go about improving it can basically make a huge difference in terms of the efficiency of your training. If you're doing reasonably well-programmed strength training, so if you imagine, let's just say, a squat exercise, and you're using a weight that, whether you're holding, you know, two dumbbells by your sides or one dumbbell up in front, or you have some bands that are resisting you, or if you're, you know, more advanced and you're in the gym and you have a barbell across your shoulders, or even if you're doing, say, like a leg press instead, you know, on a machine in the gym, if you're using a weight that's, say, relatively challenging for, let's say, 5 to 10 reps, and you're doing those reps through as large a range of motion as you can, that's going to be simultaneously improving the strength of your lower body, but also the mobility and the flexibility. Because your ankle joints, your knee joints, your hip joints, they're forced to go through a bigger range of motion as they can against some load, which has been proven to be extremely effective for improving mobility and flexibility, even as effective as stretching. But you also get all the added benefits of improving strength, gaining some muscle mass, and all the metabolic effects in terms of like your heart rate's getting up, you're burning calories and things like that. Whereas if you just do something like a static, say, quad stretch or something where you're standing, leaning up against the wall for balance, and you pull one foot up towards your butt and you're holding it for 30 or 60 seconds, fair enough, you might be improving the flexibility of that quad or thigh muscle, but you're not getting any of the benefits that you're getting from, you know, your leg press or your squat, which is improving the flexibility just as much as that stretch is. So that's kind of what I would think is the most important one there. The last loose end to tie up on that would be in terms of, like we covered, that strength training doesn't reduce flexibility and mobility. It can actually help improve it. And then the other thing is people being worried about getting too big and bulky. Like, gaining muscle mass is exceptionally difficult. It's a very, very slow process. Ask anyone who's been training in the gym for a long time and they'll tell you they wish they could gain muscle faster. If someone realizes that after, and honestly, this is how long it would take, a few years of strength training, that they're getting too big and too bulky, then you can make a review to how they're training. But to be honest, the thing that makes people too big and too bulk is extra calories. It's not muscle mass is making someone too big. It's not lifting weights is making someone too big and too bulky. I can promise you that.
I like how you are politically correct there. Extra calories, you say, extra stored calories, in other words, extra fat. Yeah, you know, it is so difficult to gain muscle. I struggle with that a lot. I lose muscle very, very quickly. It might take me 6 months of eating perfectly, you know, high protein, the right amount of calories, training like a god to gain like a couple of pounds of muscle. And I can lose that in a month if I stop it. There's a genetic component to that as well. I know I trained with a mate who he had completely different genes to me, because all he had to do was walk past a set of weights and he'd gain 3 pounds of muscle. So it's interesting, the mix of things.
And to be perfectly honest, like most people, even if they are working out, they won't work out anywhere near hard enough to gain, say, the most muscle that they could. Like, the difference between, say, training reasonably hard to support, let's say, everyday life and improve your golf game, you need to ratchet that up probably another, say, 3 or 4 levels to gain as much muscle mass as you possibly could. That's what the huge people you see in the gym have been doing for years on end. So it's just not something you need to worry about, you know? The only way you're gaining too much muscle mass is if your life is devoted to gaining muscle mass for a lot of years.
Here's an interesting question for you, and it relates to Bryson, and I hope he's not listening to this because I might offend him a little bit here, but he gained, what was it, 60 pounds or something over the course of...
He gained 50 anyway, I think, yeah.
Now, obviously, that's not all muscle, right? I would go as far as to say more than half of that was fat. Would you say something like that?
Definitely more than half is fat. More like probably three quarters.
So then why do you think, with such an intelligent guy, with such a team of people around him, why did he go that route of bulking up so much? Because, you know, say you increase your calories by 500 calories a day, you might gain a certain percentage. There'll be a higher percentage of muscle gain to fat gain. Whereas if you just shovel calories down you like you're it's going out of style, you'll probably get close to the same amount of muscle gain, but the extra is just gonna be fat because there's only so much muscle your body will gain. So why did he go that route of gaining so quickly then?
It's a good question, and you're right. Like, the way I would look at gaining muscle mass is like, it's almost like, say, and you know, taking in calories and protein, it's similar to, say, putting gas in your car. Once the tank is full, it's full. You can't just keep taking in more and you're able to use it, you know. When you take in more and more, it basically spills out or it has to go somewhere. And when we take in extra calories, they will be stored as fat. We know from looking at research and other athletes that you can't gain large amounts of muscle mass very quickly. It just doesn't happen. So if someone's gained 60 pounds or 50 pounds, like if Bryson gained 20 or 25 pounds of muscle, like in that time frame, I would be astonished. And the only way we'd really know is by getting, you know, a high quality body composition test done, you know, before and after, which we didn't do. But like, there's pictures of him, you can see when he was at his heaviest, like he was carrying a lot of body fat. You could see it in his face, you could see it in his stomach, you could see it everywhere, basically. I think he's lost quite a bit in the last maybe 4 to 6 months. He's probably down, I would say, 20 pounds. But to answer your question, I don't think there was a particularly good scientific reason to get quite that heavy. I don't think it helped him get any stronger than he would have if he stayed, you know, at a slightly lower body fat. But my guess would be that he just got consumed by the path that he was on. And he was like, this, what I'm doing is working. Because one thing like that you have to hold your hands up and say that Bryson did that is completely mind-blowing is how much clubhead speed he was able to gain. Like, there's videos of Bryson swinging his driver at 145 miles an hour, like in Chris Cuomo's lab or his living room. That's unbelievable. Like, he was approaching, there's a video where he's actually up at like 146, 147, and he's trying to hit 148, which would be a new PB for him. Like, that's completely obscene. Like, he probably would have been maybe mid to high 120s, 130 if he was lucky when he started that, I would say, when he was going all out. So to gain that much is crazy. And I bet just because he was improving so much, he was like, we need to keep going down this track. And I bet he sort of got to a point where he was like, maybe, you know, this isn't the way I'll keep going. And he's basically kept nearly all his speed as he's reduced his fat mass a little bit, basically. But I think he did it too in a period of time where there wasn't really competitive golf going on. Like, when he did the bulk of his weight gain and his speed training, I think it was when there wasn't quite so much competitive golf. So it took up a bigger allocation of his time. And now when they're playing more tournaments, I think there's been a slight change in his approach back to not quite as much focused on speed as he was during the break.
So can you think of any other, I know you kind of have three core areas that you work on with your programs. Before we get into those, are there any other like big myths that, I mean, I know there's probably hundreds of them, but as it pertains to what golf has traditionally thought about fitness and what we kind of have figured out now, like what's another big myth that comes to mind?
So two big ones, like number one is kind of the notion of golf specific exercises, which is probably the fault of golf fitness trainers, I would say, to be perfectly honest, just spreading information that doesn't really make sense. And that would be the belief that for an exercise to be useful for golfers, it needs to simulate the golf swing, where I see that kind of becoming an inefficient use of time, I won't say problematic or the wrong thing to do, because it's still infinitely better than not doing anything. But basically what I think happens is when people try and mimic or simulate a golf swing in the exercise, with the intention being to practice their golf swing, they end up doing things that aren't creating enough force to improve any of their physical characteristics. So they're not getting stronger, they're not getting more powerful, they're not getting faster. But what they're doing is also way too far away from the actual golf swing to improve that, I think. So if you imagine somebody, you know, I don't know, let's say simulating a golf swing holding, you know, a dumbbell or something like that, they're usually doing it at quite a low speed, you know, because they're practicing some sort of feeling or movement. So we know that it's definitely not doing anything to increase their muscle mass or muscle strength. It's not doing anything to increase their power or speed. And it's also just miles away from like how a golf club moves, because they're completely different implements. And I don't really think there's going to be any transfer to when they go to a range or golf course and now they're trying to hit a tiny golf ball with a long stick, that it's actually going to help them in any way. So often, even though, say, my training programs would be dubbed, say, golf specific, really what you're looking for is it effective for golfers? Does it help them improve? And really the way I try and break it down is that your physical training time for golf should be to improve your physical characteristics. So work on things like mobility, strength, power. Now, there may be some things that do end up looking like the golf swing, but that's very different to doing something with the intention of it simulating the golf swing. Because if you're, say, throwing a medicine ball as hard as you can, or slamming a medicine ball as hard as you can, or rotating against a really heavy cable, you're doing those for strength and power. You're doing it for the benefits on the muscle tissue and on your nervous system to recruit those muscle fibers. You're not doing it to practice your grip or your plane or your whatever, you know. And then I would do your golf specific movements with a golf club in allocated golf practice time, basically. I think what happens when people try and combine both oftentimes is they get stuck in a gray area where they're not doing anything to improve their physical characteristics. And they're also not really doing anything that's going to impact on changes in their golf swing.
Kind of like how I like to separate that types of phases for training in golf. So you'd have your technical phase where that is time where you're dedicating completely. All of your mental attention is on making the technical change. And then you'd have other times where it's more of a playing focus, whereas your focus is on the outcome and less so on the technique. I think when people try to combine and get the best of both worlds, they actually end up getting the worst of both worlds and they improve neither.
Yeah, one thing I touch on with that, because I know it'll be a question, is people are going to ask, what about speed sticks or the stack or things like that? Because clearly that is working on your speed with, say, a golf club or a golf type stick. That's quite different to what I'm talking about in terms of training exercises in the gym with weights and implements that are very different to a golf club. And the other thing about when you're swinging like speed sticks or the stack or something like that is essentially that is just practicing swinging like your golf swing as fast as possible. So it's still working on a physical characteristic. You're working on speed. For example, you're not going to pick up one of those implements and use it just to start practicing your takeaway or to practice your grip or to practice your plane or whatever you're working on. So it's trying to separate, am I doing this for physical improvements or am I doing this for mechanical or, you know, or skill improvements as such?
Yeah, when you're swinging with a speed stick, it's probably best not to try and hit any object as well during that, because that can put a limiter on how much speed you can create. So I'll often get people to maybe, even with technical changes, I'll take the ball away and I'll give them a deflated balloon or something like that. So it's a bigger object. They're still hitting something, but there's not the same intention there, because it's amazing how once your brain has the intention to hit an object, especially a very precise object, it changes the motion and it can stop you having the desired effect on what you're trying to do.
Absolutely. And then the last one that I would say is kind of a myth is an overemphasis on the importance of cardiovascular fitness for golfers in terms of how it can impact their golf performance. And what that really stems to, what we need to break it down to, is fatigue on the golf course. So somebody says, I play great for 13 holes and then I get really tired on, you know, the last five or six holes or whatever. They assume that because they're getting tired, they need to work on their cardio. But the question that I would ask them there is your heart rate different on the fairway walking up or riding up hole 18 than it is hole one? And the answer is no. Like if you put a heart rate monitor on someone and you track them walking up the first fairway versus the 18th fairway, it's not like that their heart and lungs are struggling to take in oxygen. Golf is slow walking with lots of breaks. So we don't really come under aerobic stress unless we've just climbed some massive hill or something like that.
You haven't played my home course, Mike. You got to come to the North Shore of Long Island that was formed by the glaciers.
Even so, like you still,
I'm kidding.
You still got plenty of time if you need it to take a break between shots, you know, and you're standing around waiting for your playing partners to hit too. So when you start getting tired in golf, what's happening? And I would say that oftentimes, to be honest, it's just people are in generally poor condition. They probably haven't played golf in a very long time, so they're deconditioned relative to the demands of golf. They might not be swinging a golf club very often, so their muscles are starting to get tired, not so that their heart and lungs can't take in oxygen. The ability to contract the muscles the way they would like to is starting to not happen because their muscles are getting tired. They've probably had really poor nutrition for the round. Most people come to a round of golf slightly hungry. They might be rushing or something like that. Now they've 5 hours on the golf course with no food and they're basically exercising. They're walking and taking golf swings. So their blood sugar levels are getting lower, which again is going to make them feel tired and their muscles won't be able to work as well. And then the last one, to be honest, is most people are just carrying too much weight. If you're walking 4 or 5 miles with 20 or 40 extra pounds, that's going to have a huge effect on your fatigue at the end of the round. But that, again, has nothing to do with aerobic fitness. Like, that's the fact that your body is forced to carry too much weight, basically. So I would say get yourself into good general condition, which you don't need cardio to do as such. And then I would concentrate on mobility, strength, and power for actually being able to make a difference to your golf swing, because the cardio is doing absolutely nothing to have a positive impact on your golf swing. And in fact, high levels of cardio or excess cardio could actually be making you slower.
There's another myth that I'm sure you'd agree with, is that you need cardio to lose fat.
Yeah, absolutely. So like I know from talking to you about this stuff in the past that you understand it, Adam, but fat loss comes down to being in an energy deficit or a calorie deficit, which can be achieved through a number of ways. Most people go about it by thinking essentially they need to get sweaty and out of breath for long periods very often. So they go headfirst into, you know, running, cycling, whatever, which is very good for you. I'm not discouraging that. But people vastly overestimate how many calories they can burn from exercise and then vastly underestimate how many calories they consume from food and drink. It's much easier to lose fat, which has to happen by being in a calorie deficit, from assessing your calorie intake from food and drink, and then supplementing your calorie output with increased activity. But where most people make a huge mistake in their quest to lose fat is they focus primarily on cardio exercise and don't do any resistance training. And why that's a problem is that when we're in a calorie or energy deficit, our body breaks down muscle tissue to use it as fuel, which we definitely don't want to happen, because that's not good for health and it's definitely not good for your swing speed or your golf game. So we want to make sure that when we're in a calorie deficit, which hopefully you're going to achieve with mainly through assessing your food and drink intake, need to make sure that you're doing plenty of resistance training so that you're losing as little muscle mass as possible. And you'll probably be able to maintain it or even slightly gain some. So that's why most of the time for golfers, I encourage them to try and do these 3, you know, 15 to 30 minute strength training sessions per week, and then just walk lots, because that's what you're doing on the golf course. And it also means that it's not tiring you out so much that it's hard to do your golf practice or it's hard to do your strength training. So if you can basically do your strength training 3 days a week, walk a lot on the days in between, you're going to be in a pretty good spot for general health and golf.
Yeah, and I can tell you just from personal experience, the time I spent, you know, getting back into working out more, like I got a little obsessed with the Peloton stuff, trying to beat my personal record. And, you know, it's great for cardiovascular health. But in terms of how it translated to golf, my swing got no faster. if anything, it stalled and I got slower. And then when I started reintroducing the strength training and then some other mic stuff and the speed sticks, that's how I went from, you know, stalling out in the low hundreds swing speed to now I'm, you know, maxing out at 110, 112. I'd credit most of it to the strength training, to be honest with you, based on what I've seen with my body and maybe intention and certainly the training. But
yeah, but you also hit balls regularly into a simulator trained to swing fast, which is, you know, very important.
Absolutely. But I think had I not reintroduced the strength training element of it, a lot of things would have been harder for me, I would say. Mike has an amazing app that is probably the best deal in all of golf. I'm giving it a little bit of a plug here, but he has all these different types of courses that you can take based on your fitness level, what you're looking to achieve. And I think most of them are centered around the three things that you keep discussing, which is mobility, strength, and power. Would you say those are kind of like the three cornerstones of what you're trying to get across to people?
Yeah, definitely. Like you kind of made a good point there with your Peloton stuff. Like it's like, obviously all exercise is great. People need to do more exercise. I'd never discourage someone from doing any type of exercise, but as soon as you make a decision that you want to have it, you know, have better benefits for a particular sport, then you need to look at the demands of the sport. So what do we do in that sport? And also what separates basically levels of, let's say, our standards of play in that sport. So golf is slow walking with lots of breaks and golf swings, all right, or golf strokes if you consider putting. There's not that much room to get better at the slow walking with lots of breaks part. That's pretty easy. You know what I mean? Unless, honestly though, unless you're in terrible, I wouldn't even say fitness, I would say unless you're in bad health, that shouldn't be a problem, you know? So now we have the part that happens in between the walking, which is actually hitting golf shots. So if we consider the full swing, the golf swing is a 1 second activity that's extremely dynamic and explosive in nature. And we only have to do it once at a time. So your activity duration in a golf swing is 1 second. So now if we start looking at things that can impact that, how can running or jogging at a moderate intensity for 45 minutes or an hour have any positive effect on how much power you can create in 1 second? It can't. It's completely different energy systems. It's different muscle fibers in terms of fast twitch versus slow twitch. So that's kind of step one, is that if we look at the golf swing, which obviously has a huge effect on standards of play, we have the duration is only 1 second. It's extremely dynamic and explosive in nature. So that means we should be doing things that can improve our power and our explosiveness. And we know that increasing muscle fiber size and increasing muscle fiber strength play a huge role in that. Then if we look at actually what happens in the golf swing in terms of the movement, so what's actually happening, what do we do? Well, we have a backswing, a transition, a downswing, and a follow through. In the backswing, we basically go through what is called, say, a stretch phase, where we rotate into the backswing, we turn our hips, we turn our torso, and we pick up our arms. So it makes sense that we want to have good mobility at our hips so that we can turn them. We want to have good mobility at our torso or our thoracic spine, what most people would call shoulder turn, so that we could turn that. And then we want to have good shoulder mobility so we can pick our arms up. And that's where the mobility side of things comes in. Makes a huge, huge difference if you have somebody who is mobile versus immobile. And I would definitely encourage people to do some mobility work. That usually works in a warm-up though. If you have somebody doing, say, 5 minutes of dynamic mobility work, working on things like hip rotation, shoulder rotation, and essentially arm lift, that's going to cover their mobility needs for the most part. And you need to do something before you warm up to, or before you lift. Go ahead, Adam.
How do you define the difference between flexibility and mobility?
So that is something that with most people I don't really cover, but the easiest way of thinking about it is that mobility is you actively doing the movement, whereas flexibility might be passive. So let's say, for example, if you lie on your back on the ground and I ask you to raise your leg up as high as you can towards the air, towards the ceiling, that's you actively pulling your leg up in the air. That would be termed mobility because it's a combination really of mobility and strength. Whereas if you were lying on the ground and now I said, put your foot into my hand, and you left your leg in my hand, and then I guided the activity, that would be flexibility. where you're not actively doing it, someone else is assisting you basically. So mobility would tend to be more involved in movements, and flexibility might be something more where you're just having somebody guide you through a range of motion and you don't actually have to use it integrated into a movement.
So lots of people might think that they're not very flexible, whereas in reality they have the muscle length, but just there's something else stopping them being mobile during the movement, right?
Exactly. Sometimes strength, and sometimes just knowing how to coordinate the movement. So yeah, going back to the demands of the golf swing, then John, it's essentially you want to have somebody mobile enough so that they can make as long a backswing as they would like, and so that they can transition well. Once somebody can do that, further improvements in mobility aren't really going to be doing anything for their golf swing. We still want to work on it so that it doesn't get any worse, but there's basically a limit with how much your mobility can help your golf swing, especially help your speed. Because if you're getting more mobile and it's not increasing how long your hand path is or basically how you transition, then it's not really going to have an effect on your speed. But that's not the same for physical strength and physical power. If those keep improving gradually, I think there's a far better chance that they're going to transfer into the golf swing and swing speed, basically.
So would you say in terms of the bang for your buck, I'm always about time invested versus output. And I've gone through your programs. I remember it was probably 2 years ago at this point, you gave me a TPI assessment over Skype and we saw that I had very tight hips and I used some of the mobility exercises you gave me and they helped tremendously. So it sounds like the strength and the power elements of working out are far more better bang for your buck versus mobility. I know that's a generic statement and doesn't apply to every golfer because some people have like really big mobility issues to get over. But is that like a decent rule of thumb that you could work with?
I would say...
Or do you work on all three of them equally?
Yeah, like so the thing there, there's two things there that I would say are important for people to realize is that number one, when you're doing your strength and power work, your mobility is going to be improving. Because you're going to be going through.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And also, like any time before I do any type of training session, you're going to warm up. So if you have even, say, 3 minutes or 5 minutes of your 15 minutes doing some dynamic mobility drills, that's going to have a huge impact on your mobility. So if we go back to the example of someone working out 3 days a week, let's say for 20 minutes, if they do 5 minutes of just focused mobility work, things for their hip rotation, their torso rotation, their shoulder mobility, they're going to have to do something to get warmed up. They might as well do something that's working on the mobility in those areas. Then you're ready to go for your 10 or 15 minutes strength training. And that's the way I'd always set it up, is a little bit of mobility at the start to get ready to work out and then do your workout.
Can we also just, this is another good myth-busting moment. I think it's safe to say at this point, we know that static stretching, what we used to do in gym class as children, where you just kind of sat there holding your legs and stretching them, versus now I've done dynamic warm-ups from your program. I've done some dynamic warm-ups from, you know, Peloton and other places. And like you said, like that dynamic warm-up, which is totally different than static stretching, whether I do it before my golf round or working out, I notice a major difference in not only just feeling good in my body, but in terms of if I measure my swing speed and stuff like that, my body can move better. So can you just like touch on the difference between a dynamic warm-up and what we used to think was a warm-up?
Exactly. So like the first thing that I would always go back to is consider what's actually happening in the activity. So if you think of the golf swing, right, we make a pretty quick stretch or rotation in the backswing, and then we make a very quick stretch and rotation in the downswing. So muscles are stretching very quickly and then contracting very quickly, which is how they create power. When we're holding a certain stretch, i.e. static stretching, for let's say 30 seconds or 60 seconds, how is that in any way preparing us for what we're about to do in the golf swing? Like, it doesn't really make sense for me to, I don't know, let's say put my hand up on a door frame and stretch my shoulder for a minute, when in my golf swing, that arm is going to be ripping back quickly, stretching, and then contracting very quickly. So static stretching would be getting into some type of position, i.e. stretch, where you can basically feel some stretch on that muscle, you hold it for a certain amount of time, and gradually try to make it go further. Whereas that's not really what's happening in a golf swing or many sporting movements at all, really. where you want to be moving through a certain range of motion. So the key difference would be in one of them, you're staying in one position and holding it. That would be static stretching. In dynamic stretching or dynamic mobility, you're going to be moving through a range of motion. And I think it makes way more sense if we're preparing for a dynamic motion like a golf swing. We want to do something that's basically bringing us from, say, our everyday life. Like, for example, if we were hitting balls after this, we've just been sitting down for, let's say, an hour or an hour and a half. It's going to be much better for us to go through some progressive movements where we're getting closer and closer to the range of motion and the speed that we're going to be doing in the golf swing, rather than going down and touching our toes, holding there for 1 minute, grabbing your heel, pulling it up to your butt, holding for 1 minute, putting your arm over your head, holding it for 1 minute, as opposed to if we started doing some pelvis twists, some torso twists, some dynamic arm circles, things like that. That's where the big differences are, really.
Yeah, as I get older, I never really thought about warming up when I was younger. I don't think many of us do. I probably should have better. But as I am approaching 40, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to this are, as they get older, they just feel their body takes a little bit longer to rev the engine up. I've seen just literally 5 minutes of really specific dynamic warm-up, or 10 at most for me. It gets my heart going a little bit and I just feel so much better. And also, I'm not someone who's been injured a lot, but the few times that I have pulled something on the golf course, almost always it happened when I just went straight out there and did not get my body ready. So I'm just as impatient as everyone else. I don't love doing it, but you know, 5-7 minutes of a dynamic warm-up is huge.
Even if you think of the name warm-up, like the idea is that essentially we get warm, because getting warm is really important for preparing us for activity. When we get our heart rate up a little bit, when we start to sweat a little bit, our core body temperature is raising. And because the temperature in our body is raising, our muscles can contract faster. And when we practice the movements that we're about to do in the golf swing, that also taps into our brain, our nervous system, and the signals they can send to our muscles are happening more efficiently and they're happening faster. So there's a complete difference between that type of graduated warm-up, going from, say, your kind of baseline everyday activity to essentially revving the engine and getting up to full speed, as opposed to just stretching. Stretching isn't really doing anything to get us warm. All we're really doing is stretching a muscle. And that's not even how it's going to be working when we go and make a golf swing. It's like, if you imagine... Go ahead, Adam.
Sorry, I was going to say that I have heard that stretching can actually have a negative effect on power output as well.
It can, like, there is research on that, but the research with those things is almost sometimes like created to cause that result, if you get me. Like, I don't really think that that's going to be the problem as such. It's just that it's not anywhere near as effective as gradually getting warmed up. Like, if we consider someone, let's say someone who's about to do a 40-yard dash in the combine, right? They arrive at the training ground where they're going to be tested. They put on their workout gear and they're getting ready to go. Let's say you have 10 minutes. You're told you're getting timed for your 40-yard dash in 10 minutes. And if you can break, you know, let's say whatever, 4.7, you're signing a $1 million contract. You've 10 minutes. Are you going to start gradually doing 40-yard runs where you can incrementally build up the speed towards your top speed? Or are you going to stand there for 10 minutes and do 1 minute stretching each calf, holding it, 1 minute stretching each hamstring, holding it, 1 minute stretching each groin, 1 minute stretching each quad? Like, there's no way that there's going to be any comparison between how fast those two people can run, or that same person, if they do 10 minutes of gradually revving up towards the speed they need to go at in the activity they're going to do, versus the person who is, let's say, sitting on the ground with their leg out in front and they're trying to touch their toe and holding it for a minute. One is preparing the person for the activity. The other one is not. It's the same with golf.
Okay, so let's talk about, we covered mobility a bit. Maybe we'll go into strength a little bit more. Everyone wants to know how to get a faster swing speed. You're an expert on it at this point. How does power play into it? You have a lot of exercises that I don't think people would ever think of doing in the context of increasing their swing speed. But now I'm seeing videos of, I just saw that video that PGA Tour released on Twitter with your client, Mackenzie Hughes, who was almost, you know, was in the mix at the US Open this weekend doing your workouts at home. And I saw a lot of the power explosiveness. So talk about what that is and how it pertains to the golf swing and also increasing swing speed.
So clubhead speed is an expression of force. And what I mean by that is if we want to increase clubhead speed, we have to increase how much force is being created. When we do exercises where we are trying to create as much force as possible in very short time frames, our body gets basically practice at telling our muscle fibers to contract as quickly and as forcefully as possible. And without getting super complex, we all have a certain proportion of slow twitch muscle fibers and fast twitch muscle fibers. In very fast activities, slow twitch muscle fibers can't help us because they cannot contract fast enough relative to how the movement is happening. That's why things like Peloton and jogging and things like that can't help our speed in the golf swing, because they're not developing the levels of force that are required. So you'll see that some of the things I have golfers do are things like, if we just consider two, let's say a vertical jump and a medicine ball slam. The key with those exercises is that on every single rep, you are producing as much force as you possibly can. The intent to move with as much power as possible has to be there. The reason why that's so important is that it basically starts in the brain. When we try and move with as much power as possible, our body recruits those fast twitch fibers. So if I gave you a medicine ball, John, and I said, I want you to pick this up, we'll just consider, say, the side throws into the wall that people see me prescribe all the time. So you're standing there with, let's say, an 8-pound med ball, and you're throwing it off the wall. If I tell you to throw that ball off the wall as hard as you possibly can, you're going to recruit all of your fast twitch fibers, and you're going to be able to train those. You'll make them better at producing force. But if you do that same exercise, but you don't go at maximum intensity, let's say you only try and throw it at 75% of your maximum power, you're not going to recruit those fast twitch fibers because you don't need them to throw at 75% power. So that's why we need to do exercises when we're trying to increase our speed or power, where we're producing as much force as we can. And that's why reps need to be relatively low, because once the reps get high, we start to get tired and the power output goes down, and the rest periods need to be relatively long, because very oftentimes people turn power activities into endurance activities, which is not really what we're looking for. So that's the key for the power stuff. If you think of when we're trying to hit a golf ball as hard as we can, we need to be able to tap into and use our fast twitch fibers. In order to improve how well we can do that, we need to practice tapping into and using them in training, which can be done with swinging golf clubs as fast as we can, swinging speed sticks as fast as we can. And it can also be done with things like jumping as high as possible and throwing and slamming med balls as hard as possible. The reason med balls are a little bit different and jumping is a little bit different, and it's why I would classify speed and power as slightly different, is that power is basically going to be somewhere between speed and strength. So strength might be, say, a very heavy squat, you know, with a barbell or whatever. Power might be something like a vertical jump holding, let's say, a 10-pound weight in each hand. And then speed will be something that's even lighter again. So something like swinging a speed stick or swinging a golf club or sprinting. And if you can tap into all of those three elements, basically, you're going to be in a really good spot.
How much time do you spend kind of building muscle in this? So I suppose that would be the strength work versus training the muscle to respond as quickly as possible.
Yeah, so there's basically two main ways we can get stronger. One is by increasing the size of our muscle fibers, and then the other is by our brain getting better at recruiting the muscle fibers we already have. And to be honest, they happen in strength training pretty much in the same time frame. Like at the start, the emphasis is more on we get used to recruiting muscle fibers that we have, but we've never really used. And then as we get better at that quickly, and then after a while, the main way to improve strength then is by increasing muscle fiber size. Another element that comes into it a little bit is that to keep increasing muscle fiber size, you need to be training very, very close to what's called a mechanical failure. And that's basically the last couple of reps of a set where you're trying to move the weight extremely hard, but because you're either very tired or the weight is very heavy, it's barely moving at all. That's what mechanical stress is. And if we don't have that stress, muscle fiber won't really grow. But where we need to kind of be careful then too is that's not really what's happening in the golf swing. So while bigger muscle fibers are absolutely useful for improving your power, we want to get bigger muscle fibers with our strength training. But then we want to learn how to basically make these muscle fibers contract more quickly with things like vertical jumping and medicine ball throwing and speed sticks. Does that make sense? So it's really like your heavy lifting is helping you develop the muscle fiber, make it bigger and stronger. And then your speed training with either your own golf clubs or your speed sticks or your stack, your jumping and your throwing is teaching you now how to use those muscle fibers and make them contract more quickly. And if you can do both of those things, you're going to be in a really good spot.
I think the biggest mistake I made was initially I did a lot of strength work. I didn't supplement it with any power work. In fact, at that time, I was so mechanical, I was probably reducing my power. And now I'm so ingrained in kind of the bodybuilder style of training, not that I look anything like a bodybuilder, but I've gone down that road of hypertrophy and I still don't do any speed work. So I'm not seeing the gains of the extra muscle.
Bryson's actually a good example of that, that kind of everybody can understand because everybody obviously knows who he is and sort of what he's done. So I got asked so many questions about Bryson's training when, you know, all the videos were coming out, and I actually made a video about it. It's on Twitter. But if Bryson only did his, and he used a very much bodybuilding style training program, if he had only done his, say, workouts, and he hadn't changed his technique, which has changed massively, which you guys would be able to look at probably even more closely than me, he's also done an absolutely inordinate amount of speed training. Like, I would love to know, like, on average, how many drivers he hit per month as fast as possible with speed feedback from a radar. It's like you can't separate, okay, he's after getting absolutely huge with his bodybuilding style workout program, and let's say he's gained 20 miles an hour clubhead speed. Well, we've no idea how much that contributed versus how much his changes in technique and the fact that he was literally hitting hundreds of drivers per day as hard as he possibly could. Like, we don't know what the answer is there. I think they all helped a certain amount. How much one helped versus the other is very hard to say.
Yeah, I think one of the, again, through my own anecdotal experiences going through all these different types of training, it's the intent of explosiveness is usually the missing piece for a lot of people. It was for me for a long time. It's like you have to, whether it's with the speed sticks or some of the jumping exercises you do, it's like you're trying to push as hard as you possibly can, harder than you would ever explode on the golf course, to make that. I always think of it as like removing the regulator off a golf cart. Like, when I step up to the tee swinging faster now, I don't feel like I'm swinging at 130% than I used to. My new normal has shifted to faster. I can have more intent with my swing to really go for it, but it's almost like you're shifting what feels normal to you. And for a lot of golfers who do want to add swing speed or just fitness in general, like, your new normal could be 85 miles to 95 miles an hour. And technically, you won't feel all that different on the golf course. It's just the intent of the explosiveness that is required. Like, you really got to push hard almost.
So something that I try and tell people all the time in their training, and it involves understanding one really simple physics equation. And I am not good at physics or math, so I promise it's not difficult to understand. But when we consider somebody training to try and improve how much power their body can create, what we need to consider in our training, right? I said earlier that basically clubhead speed, our power, is an expression of force, okay? The formula for force is mass multiplied by acceleration. So how we can apply this to our training is the mass is whatever implement you're using. So whether that's your body weight, or you're moving a 20-pound dumbbell, or you're moving a speed stick, or a golf club, or a resistance band, or a kettlebell, whatever thing that you're trying to move in your training, that is the mass. And then the acceleration is how quickly you're moving it. So if we have a set mass, like let's just say you're pressing a 20-pound dumbbell, the amount of force that you create by moving that dumbbell slowly versus moving that dumbbell very quickly is extremely different. And because of that, it has an extremely different effect on your training. And if we consider those two things, mass and acceleration, you can increase acceleration by practicing moving light things exceptionally quickly. And then you can improve the mass side of it by gradually moving heavier and heavier masses. So that's why we want to target getting stronger, lift bigger weights, bigger masses. And then we also want to practice accelerating things as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I think, again, just another thing that was probably passed down from golfers, like I think we're always been trained to think is like, don't go too hard, swing smooth. Like this was never, I think it's a shift of thinking for a lot of people, especially how they would train for golf, is that that element, that intent to create that power and that explosiveness wasn't really there. It was almost like, I think I read a quote from someone put on Twitter, maybe it was you, it said Raymond Floyd. It was like, we were taught to avoid weights at all costs. Like they were avoided like the plague because they didn't want to mess anything up with the swing. And personally, I have not seen anything but benefits in terms of how I can move a golf club in terms of technique from getting stronger and faster. It's helped me, if anything. I have more control over my body. So in terms of like strength, I don't think it's surprising, but like when you talk about golf specific exercises, if someone goes through one of your programs, they're going to see a lot of bread and butter exercise, bicep curls, shoulder presses, squats, pushing and pulling. Like, can you just talk about, I guess, the simplicity of it, just to let people know that what do you think about are good strength exercises that are quote unquote golf specific, you know, not necessarily the way you do it, but they help your golf swing.
So the way that I try and look at it is, if we consider the golf swing as what we're really trying to make an impact on, the closer the exercise gets to the golf swing in terms of the speed that you're moving and the ranges of motion that you're able to use, then that's where I see it becoming more specific makes sense. If you're doing heavy weightlifting to try and increase your muscle mass and your muscle strength, it's really hard to load exercises in a fashion that are mimicking the golf swing and actually still create enough stress to make your body bigger and stronger. Like if you consider what's happening in the golf swing, how do you load that movement to make basically the majority of your muscles bigger and stronger? It's not really going to work very well. Like if you start using a really heavy golf club, you're barely going to be able to move it, and it's going to be your forearms and your wrists can't move it. If you try and move a really heavy, and you can tell by the way I'm explaining these that I've tried them, if you try and say rotate or chop against a really heavy cable, that's going to be hugely dictated by how much you weigh, because you're basically getting pulled back by it. So I try and look at exercises that are extremely basic and fundamental movements that once they're learned can be loaded progressively over long periods of time. So really simple, there's five main movements that I try and use for people's, let's say, strength training. And these are the ones that they use to get their muscles and their body bigger and stronger, basically. And that's for the lower body, squat and hinge. So basically, everyone knows what a squat is. A hinge is more like an RDL style movement where it's less knee bend and it's more hinging over at the hips. Because with a squat and a hinge, we basically hit the two main lower body joints, our knees and our hips, basically. The ankles are involved in both of them. So squat, hinge, then we have push with the upper body, pull with the upper body, and rotate. So if you can get stronger at squatting, hinging, pushing, pulling, and rotating, you're going to be using a huge amount of your body's muscle. And the thing that's nice about them is they can basically be progressed indefinitely. Like you can add, say, 5 pounds a month to a squat for literally, like it won't be linear, but you can incrementally improve a squat movement, a hinge movement, a push movement, a pull movement for a few years. And as you do that, your muscles are going to be getting so much stronger, and bigger muscles can produce more force. And because during that time, you're going to have been practicing your golf swing and you're going to be going to have been swinging things quickly, those bigger and stronger muscles and your brain is going to know how to use that increased strength when you're swinging. So that's why I don't really see the point in trying to simulate the golf swing with heavy, slow moving exercises, because first of all, you can't load them in a way that's actually conducive to building any strength. And also because they're going to be so heavy and slow, they're not going to be specific to the golf swing. Like, it's going to be a completely different movement pattern. Your brain's going to recognize them as differently. And then, as we say, start getting slightly away from the really big heavyweights and we come closer to what's actually happening with a golf swing, maybe when we're doing things like throwing and slamming med balls or rotating cables or bands, we can do things that are slightly more similar to the golf swing to try and teach those now bigger and stronger muscles to contract faster and make sure we're hitting them kind of in angles and things like that that they're used in the swing. But to be honest, I don't even think that that's particularly important. If you get way, way stronger in squatting, hinging, pushing, pulling, and rotating, and you're practicing your golf swing, you're going to see really, really good improvements. I'd actually go further than that, because squatting, hinging, pushing, and pulling, like, I don't care if you do it with a barbell, a dumbbell, on machines. Like, honestly, it's not really that important. Like, use whatever you have, work around any injuries you have, but basically make sure that your big muscle groups are getting way, way stronger over time. Make sure that your mobility is improving, and then make sure that you're learning how to use essentially that new strength and those bigger muscle fibers in your golf swing, which happens from practicing your golf swing, not from wondering, how can I make this strength exercise in the gym more similar to my golf swing? It's still going to be so far away from it that it doesn't matter. And you're not going to be able to get as strong because you've basically messed up being able to load it heavily.
Which is incredibly good news, because I often hear, you know, people have a lot of reticence and like they're just scared of getting started with strength training or any type of exercise. And, you know, you can do it at home with dumbbells, like you said, and it's just very simple bread and butter exercises that you can get incrementally better at over time in short periods of time. So it's not like, you know, if you did this, started off 10 minutes, three times a week, it's like anything else. I always say this because I have to remind myself, just getting started is the hardest part, and building the habit and maintaining the habit. Like, I have this worksheet I have in front of me. I'm a big James Clear fan. And for me to continue working out, I need to visually check off the boxes on this, because I have my goal of doing 3 strength workouts a week. I still like doing the Peloton just for general health. I enjoy it. So I try and do that 2 or 3 times a week. And I think one of the main things I hope people are getting from this is that it's not all that complicated. That's why I like what Mike does, is it's incredibly simple. They're bread and butter exercises. They're just arranged in a way that's more efficient with your time.
Exactly. Like, it's not that, say, the exercises you do don't matter and things like that, but we're kind of getting to, like, essentially, you know, like splitting hairs, really, in terms of, like, you can get nearly all the same benefits from doing it in a wide variety of ways, which, to be honest, when I was younger and I was less experienced and researched, I actually didn't really know. Like, I didn't really believe, like, if we'd have done this podcast 8 or 10 years ago, I'd have given you probably very different answers to this question. But your muscle fibers don't know what exercise you did to make them bigger and stronger. If they're bigger and stronger, they're going to produce more force. Practice your sporting skill, which for us is the golf swing, and you'll now be able to use those bigger, stronger muscle fibers how you want. So that's why I get really frustrated with some of the golf fitness stuff on social media, because it's just so misguided. But because people see, oh, that kind of looks like a golf swing and it's called golf specific, that has to be better than, say, working my ass off for 2 years to improve the strength in my squat. But if you actually break it down and you look at some of these exercises, it's like, what is this exercise actually doing? Apart from getting you moving in a way that's similar to a golf swing, which you could just do with your golf club, because there's nowhere near enough stress being imparted on this person's body to have any type of physical adaptation. Fair enough, they're getting warmed up, they're burning some calories, their heart rate's getting up, but you can do that with kind of anything, you know. And it's an exercise being labeled as golf specific because it kind of resembles a golf swing, but I'm not sure it's really having any impact on that golfer's ability to do anything as such. And if you then consider how else they could be using their time, like, it's a lose-lose for me, you know. Like, I know from my own training and from trying to get better at golf and from working with some really good golfers, basically my advice is use your time in the gym to improve your physical capabilities and then use your golf practice time to improve your practice and skill. When you try and make everything you do in the gym and everything you do in the range merge together, I'm pretty certain that you're going to have a lot of time spent in the gym that's doing nothing that you couldn't have just done on the range. You're not getting, are at home in front of a mirror or something like that. You're not getting any stronger. You're not getting any more powerful. There's no stress being placed on the person's body. If there's no stress, they're not getting stronger. It's just people who don't have the kind of understanding of the principles behind it get sucked in by the torso, the balance beam on someone's shoulders while they're kind of rotating on a Swiss ball or something like that. It's just kind of like, oh man, that must be awesome for my core stability or whatever. It's like, there's no real demand. Like, don't get me wrong, the exercise might be hard to do and it might be impressive that the person can do it. But if they consider, does it actually transfer to what we're trying to get better at? Usually the answer is no. You guys are probably familiar with him. He's getting pretty popular on social media now, is Drew Cooper. Have you seen him swinging a golf club?
I have not.
So Drew's probably in his mid-30s. He lives here in California. He used to be like, he's still a pretty good amateur golfer, but he just basically discovered he has all this clubhead speed. Like, he just entered his first long drive. He's just entered his first long drive tournament and he hit like 145 with a long driver or something like that. And he's, you know, swinging in like the high 130s with just a regular shaft and driver. But Drew has a background, basically has a really similar background in training to me. We've done really, really similar training over, say, the last 10 years, even a similar kind of like sporting and golf background. But like, Drew is 6'4 and 225 pounds and way, way, way stronger than me because he's way bigger. He's way more muscle mass. And I was talking to him about training and we were basically saying that none of the stuff that he does in training is really any that different to what I do in training or what we would recommend to anyone else do in training. He's just way, way better at the stuff he does in training. Like, he's, and what I mean by that is he's able to produce way more force because he's way stronger. He's a bigger guy. Like, I'm fine with that. You know what I mean? That's just going to be our genetic like limitations, basically.
Well, hey man, you're talking to a guy who's 5'8 and 153. So I'm looking at you and be like, I wish I was as big as Mike.
What we were saying is that like, there's really like no secrets in it. No, not saying that there's nothing else that we can ever learn. That's obviously not true, but like, we have a pretty good idea. It's like you guys, I say, Adam, looking at someone when they're on a TrackMan or a flight scope or something now, or a quad, you have a pretty good idea of what they need to do to hit the ball great. They just need to get way, way better at making that happen. Yeah, training is the exact same thing. Like, I have a pretty good idea that if a person can basically increase by this much in their strength and their power over time, and they have the confidence to actually use that power when they're swinging, their speed's going to go way up. There's not really any secrets. The hard thing is, and this is why it's so hard for me now to get faster, is that like, I've been trying to get better at that for 10 years and I have gotten a lot better at it for 10 years. So it's really, really hard to keep improving at it. But the good news is for that people who are doing very little now is that like, they could be completely transformed in 3 years or 5 years, literally by following the exact same exercises and just getting better at them and sticking with them. But when there's people then advertise, no, this is golf specific. That's not golf specific. This is what you need to do. It's like, get lost. Like, this isn't what's changing this person's ability to produce force. Like, muscles, especially if we're talking about speed, like muscle is the only thing that can make our body move. If we're trying to move our body faster and with more power, we need our muscles to be able to produce more force. And while there's definitely nuance in that when you're training advanced athletes, most people need to make their muscles bigger and stronger, and they need to learn how to make them contract more quickly. And we do that with heavy strength training and speed training. Get better at both of those things for people won't like to hear this, but get better at both of those things for 5 years and let me know how your clubhead speed changes. You know, it will be a lot.
Well, I appreciate your confidence in the simplicity of it all. My assumption when I started your stuff was that like I was going to see behind the veil at all these like really like cool exercises that I'd never seen before. What I did see was a very nice collection and a plan and a system, which is important for anyone who wants to improve at anything, is you just need some type of collection of things like here, do this and you will get better at it. It's just your commitment and time are the limiting factors. I've seen you... You have PGA Tour clients accessing the same. Yeah, like you don't say like, oh, I make.
Yeah, I was going to say it's the 80-20 rule, right?
100%. I didn't actually know that clip with McKenzie was coming out at all. Like I didn't know that was recorded, but I was actually so glad with the exercises that he did in that workout for when the camera crew was there. They're all exercises that are in the programs on the app. You know what I mean? It's like he's doing hip hinges with a hex bar. He's doing med ball slams and rotational throws. He's doing upper body pulling, pushing. He's just trying to get way stronger at those things over time, fit it in around his play. He's also, you know, swinging golf clubs as fast as he can or swinging speed sticks as fast as he can a couple of times per week and tracking how his speed is changing, basically. And that's the same thing that I encourage, you know, pretty much everyone else to do. And a way that I often get people to look at it like is that I know they're not golfers, but they're still making a golf swing. If we talk about clubhead speed, like look at the long drivers. I absolutely promise you that the difference in the long drive pros is not the golf specific or golf mimicking exercises they're doing in their training. Like those guys are complete monsters. Look at how much muscle mass they have and look at how strong they are. Like if you see a slow-mo or a paused video of someone like Justin James or Joe Miller at the top of their backswing, their quads and hamstrings and glutes are bursting out of their pants. You know, their shoulders and forearms are bursting out of their t-shirts or, you know, their forearms are look like they're going to burst. Like that's not created by some exercise that, you know, you're doing at real slow speed with no weight that mimics a golf rotation. Like those dudes are tanks. Like they're so strong. And then because they've chosen to practice swinging a golf club really fast, really frequently, they can swing a golf club really fast. If we got, say, like javelin and discus and hammer throwers out of athletics, and we got baseball pitchers out of baseball, and we got hockey players out of ice hockey, and someone, you know, gave them some basic instruction on how to swing a club, I promise you they would be way faster than what we consider is a fast clubhead speed now of like, say, 110 or 120 miles an hour, because they're so strong and powerful. If they then learn the skill of swinging a golf club, they'd have no problem being up like way high in the 120s, in the 130s. That's the difference. Like that's the limiting factor. And most people who aren't training much, if we say that they're at a 1 out of 10 in terms of where their strength and power could be, they can probably get to a 5 out of 10 in a year. They can probably get to a 7 out of 10 in 3 years. And then they'll probably be stuck at say a 8.5 or 9 out of 10 for the next 10 years. But they're still after getting from a 1 out of 10 to a 9 out of 10, you know, and that's basically where you're then going to be working to try and stay. And it's only when you're coming to the real end of your genetic capabilities is when that's what basically pro sports is. That's when all of your priorities and sacrifices are being made to get better. But we just don't need that, you know, we can stay at 10% under that and still have, you know, a kind of perfectly normal life, for want of a better word.
That's what I don't like about the idea of compounding improvement. It doesn't work like that. In fact, it's the reverse. You see most of your gains early on in anything. There's a good TED talk by a guy, I think it's called like the first 20 minutes or something, where he talks about how you gain the most improvement during that first 20 minutes or 20 days or something of learning a skill. So, you know, you can go from completely unable to play a guitar to playing a few songs in 20 days. And it's a massive improvement. Similarly, in strength as well, you can go from being really weak to seeing quite a significant improvement early on. And it's the same with your handicap as well. It's easier to get from a 35 handicap down to a 15 handicap than it is to get from a 3 to a scratch. It's much easier.
Exactly. And then the other thing that I would say is kind of great for people to understand about strength training too is like, once you get to say a reasonably advanced level, because I always get questions from people like, oh, I've hit a plateau, you know, or whatever. And you kind of say to them, well, look, you've been training for 3 years. You're after getting this much stronger. Your club head speed's after going from 105 to 113 or 115. Average on the PGA Tour is 114. So like, it's not like your speed is slow. Like, you're literally swinging at the same speed that the best players in the world do. And then they're kind of like, well, what do I need to do to get better or to get faster? And you're like, well, to be honest, I don't mean this to sound negative. Like, the amount that you'd need to change once you get to a really advanced level, and this only applies probably to basically no one listening, but it is important to touch on, is that the changes that you'd need to make in your life to get past a very advanced stage and try and keep making improvements is so vastly different to what you need to do to just stay at that advanced level you're at. Like, you could stay at the same advanced level you're at for probably 10 or 20 years just by doing the same things over and over. And you're going to be absolutely streets ahead, like unrecognizable compared to the people who aren't doing anything in those 10 and 20 years. So while you might not be, say, getting better, if you compare yourself to everybody around you who's getting way worse, because that's what happens with age once we're about 30, like, it's unreal how once you've put in basically, let's say, 5 years of decent strength training, you can basically maintain those gains for decades, because we see how long strength sticks around. Like people who have been strength training for years and years, they stay unbelievably strong into like their 50s, 60s, 70s. It's not like they hit 40 and 50, their strength starts to drop off. Their strength hangs around. Whereas most people, once they hit about 30, muscle mass and strength declines literally year on year, and give it a couple of decades, and the difference between, like, say, the 30-year-old and 50-year-old who have been training versus not training, or the 50-year-old and the 70-year-old, or the 70-year-old and the 85-year-old, it's just streets apart. I've been lucky enough to train a few people in like their 70s and 80s who are in extremely good physical function, like really, really impressive condition. And it's that same thing, like, there's literally no secrets to it. Like, they're just the people who basically either realized that something had to change and they changed it, or they just basically never stopped. Some of them realized that like 50 or 60, they were like, shit, I'm getting into a physical condition here that isn't good. I need to make some changes. And again, like that, once they make changes and give it some time, they see improvements. Or they're the people who, you know, played sport in high school or, you know, were active in college or something like that, and just kind of kept going with it. That's basically what it is. It's doing the right things and then just allowing time to take care of the rest, basically.
Well, the good news is I get a lot of messages from, you know, people who are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s even. And, you know, a common theme I hear is injury and pain. And I know a lot of people are unfortunately living with pain. And a lot of it is due to, you know, being sedentary in your normal life, sitting all day at work and not really exercising at all. And, you know, Mike, I've learned a lot of this from you and I've seen the research you've presented, is that, you know, the pill is often what's given to people. And the real prescription, and you're seeing this more from doctors, is like, you can get started whenever. I don't care if you're 80 years old. Getting started with this type of stuff, and I'm giving a strong sales pitch here, is I'm not saying you will be pain-free forever, but a lot of those things, I know whatever minor injuries I've had have pretty much all disappeared adding this type of work to my body. And I know it's never too late to start. So could you just, I know we're going really long over our normal episode time here, but that's okay. Just touch really briefly on just pain in general and injuries and how this all connects together.
Well, like, the first thing, to be completely honest, is that pain is extremely complex. It might not be related to your physical function, your physical activity, or anything like that. Like, there's a whole science on pain that if I attempted to talk about, there's people who are qualified to talk about it would be very upset. But the way I would more so look at it is physical function. Like, oftentimes people have, say, an area that gives them some issue. So if we consider someone has a knee or a lower back issue, like, there's basically two things that happen. Number one is you have someone and they say, I have X wrong with my right knee, so that means that I can't do lower body strength training. And then what happens is they stop using that area, so it gets weaker, it loses mobility, it loses muscle mass. They also, which is really important, get into the mindset of, there's something wrong with my right knee, so that I need to mind it and I can't use it. And then you multiply by let's say, a number of years. And now that right knee has gotten really weak because they don't use it. And then you have the other side of that is I have something wrong with my right knee. Okay, this is my, say, medical condition, or this is my injury history or whatever. But you can say, well, what is my knee capable of now? And basically, how can I work on incrementally making this area stronger and essentially strengthen all the areas around it? And okay, it might be at a pretty low level of physical function now, and it might never be, say, you know, as good as my left one, or it might never be as good as, you know, my friend's one. But if you gradually work on it over the course of, you know, months and years, and you're also telling yourself that, no, my knee is actually getting better, it's just a huge difference in outcome in, say, 5 or 10 years' time versus the person who's decided, no, my right knee is dust. That's it. No longer can do exercises that involve my right knee, versus the person who says, well, this is what I can start with and I'm going to try and gradually get stronger. They'll always be able to find something that they can do relatively pain-free unless they have a very serious injury, and then just gradually make it better over time, really. And function tends to improve when people do that.
Do you see that working on mobility, strength, and power? This is a loaded question, so I don't expect you to fully have the answer, because injuries can happen for a number of reasons. But do you think it's fair to say that as you get stronger, more mobile, more explosive in your body for golf or whatever, you're lowering your chances of injuring yourself on the golf course?
The way I would look at injuries is that they generally occur, like in terms of injury related to a sport, they generally occur when your body is not conditioned to meet the demands you're placing on it. So if you're getting injured from, you know, basically swinging golf clubs and playing golf, well, a way that you can make your body better conditioned to those demands is by making the joints and the muscles stronger, and basically in some areas, especially in the joints, making them more mobile so that you can withstand those stresses better. Where injuries, really what it comes down to, like, is, you know, people often ask about, well, I'm injured, should I rest or should I work out or whatever? Like, really what injury is too much stress relative to how much you can currently tolerate. What you need to do for injuries is you need to, in the short term, reduce how much you're doing so that there's less stress coming in. But then in the long term, as you start recovering, actually do gradually more to improve your tolerance. So get stronger, get more mobile, get better conditioned, so that now you're able to better tolerate the stresses from your golf game. Essentially get your body to a much higher level of function so that whatever you're doing with your golf practice and play isn't basically taxing that at as high a capacity.
Awesome. I feel like we've covered a lot here. We're at... Adam looks like he might be dying over there or falling asleep. I can't tell.
I'm enjoying it. I'm looking at the computer screen and I get headaches. So glasses, I'm dropping the glasses a little off. Bit. But no, I'm listening intently. I love all this stuff. So
this is what happens, John, when someone asks me about physical training for golf. There's 2 hours of everybody's lives gone forever.
They're not gone, because I believe in this stuff so much. And we've only had one other guest on here. I don't know how many guests we're going to have on this show long term. But I just think the information that you're presenting and the fitness community in general, is it certainly can help, like I said, become a better golfer, you know, more control over your body. I think it can improve your skill on the course as a good complement to that, and increasing club head speed and hitting the ball farther. Adam and I have talked about that a lot on this show and how that can lower your scores. And Mike, you're living proof of that. You're a scratch golfer now yourself. You've shown plus one, me too. We're both plus ones now. So, you know, Mike has kind of shown people on Twitter he's lived up to the physical side, but he's also testing his actual game with it all, and it's working together nicely. So I just think with anything like this, you have to have a plan. You kind of have to start not necessarily small, but at least don't inundate yourself with too much. And that's why we always talk about listening to one voice. So we're essentially doing a long sales pitch for your app here, Mike. Why don't you just tell people briefly about your app? I wouldn't point people in this direction unless I used it myself and I trust it. I think it's very reasonably priced and there's a ton of info in there, but just, you know, wrap it all up with what you offer and where people can find you.
Well, yeah, just before going into the app stuff, like you were saying, the information is valuable to people. I think what's really important for all of us to recognize, like, and I definitely do, is we're involved in say golf improvement, but most of our stuff is with people who golf is just a part of their lives, essentially, you know, like, yeah, we want to improve our handicaps and get better at golf, but we also want to be able to play golf reasonably well for a very long period of time, you know? And when you consider that, there's just, and I'm not saying this because it's my career or whatever, but like, if you consider the alternative of not looking after your physical training versus looking after your physical training, just take a look around the golf course at a driving range the next day you're there. You're going to see some older people who are, you know, skipping around the course, walking with their push cart, absolutely no issues whatsoever. And you're going to see people who can't get around 9 holes without using a cart. They're sore for 3 and 4 days afterwards, and they're losing enjoyment from golf because, you know, their ball is now going 120 yards and their buddies is going 220 yards and, you know, they're both 75 or 80 or whatever. So I think it's just something that I don't understand how people can look at the two options and not consider to go with looking after their physical training. In terms of where they can find my stuff, then I do have an app with a variety of golf fitness programs. You have to sign up for the app on my website. You won't find it in the app store. So it's fitforgolf.blog is the website, and they can get all the info they need there. There's a 1 month trial for just $6 if they enter the code FFG trial. And then if they don't want to keep going after 1 month, they just cancel. All they've invested is $6 and they've gotten a chance to see all the training programs, all the material. That's basically it. They can have a look at the testimonial page on the website. There's been about 6,000 golfers have used the app now. So pretty big sample size, and basically people from teenagers to 80-year-olds, from Ryder Cup players and major winners to 28 handicaps. So there's a reasonably good spread. And I'm also really happy to answer any questions. Like if you ask anyone on the app, I'm pretty responsive to any questions that come through there. So if someone wants to even email me through the website with questions before they get started or whatever, I'm happy to answer those.
Awesome. Adam, do you have any closing thoughts here?
I don't. I say, would the summary of all of that be, you know, deadlifts, squats, bench press, pull-ups, and a bunch of speed training, some rotational stuff as well?
Yeah, 100%. And I would say, like, the only kind of caveat I put on that is consider those exercises you just listed out as movements, and don't be afraid to choose a variation or option of those that suit you. You know what I mean? Like, so by saying we want people to squat and deadlift, it doesn't mean you have to be deadlifting, you know, a barbell from the floor with, you know, 200 pounds. And it doesn't mean you have to go into the squat rack and try and figure out how to use a barbell. Like, you can do a deadlift with a kettlebell, or you can do it with 2 dumbbells, or you can do, you know, a very restricted range of motion to suit your current flexibility or lower back issues. You can do a squat with a weighted backpack or holding a child in front of you. You don't need to go, you know, all into, you know, what people would consider kind of full, say, power lifter or bodybuilder mode. Well, that's great. Just,
but your app will have all of those variations, right?
Exactly. That's basically what it is. It's like, I show a movement and I'm like, if you're just starting, do it this way. If you're, you know, trying to swing your driver 135 miles an hour, you probably need to do it this way. And here are the ways in between, depending on that, that you can try out. And it's basically like, try a couple of the different ones pretty quickly and figure out which variation suits you. And over time, if you want, try and progress to the more advanced one.
Awesome. Well, I hope everyone takes a look at it. I think the main benefit is you're getting Mike's expertise in the collection of stuff. I use it myself, so I'll personally vouch for the quality of the information. So check him out at fitforgolf.blog. And where can they find you on Twitter, Mike? That's right. You're one of the best Twitter follows, by the way. You're really good information on there.
Oh, thank you. So it's at fit_4_golf.
All right. Well, this is our longest podcast ever. Congratulations. We will be back with another episode next week.
Part two?
Yet.
No, I'm just kidding.
Part two, yeah. I'd love to have you on again down the road. But again, once, you know, get on the app and you've got all you need. So thanks for coming on. Thanks for educating people. Hopefully we motivated some people to get started. That is the hardest part, in my opinion, just getting started. And I can assure anyone, if you've never done anything like this before, prepare for your golf game and life to improve dramatically. I think it's super important to me, and I hope it at least gets as little as 1% people listening to this can start down that path. That'd be great. I hope it's more. So thanks to Mike, and we will see you next week.
Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.